This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil. Britain said Sunday that it was sending more than 600 medical devices, including oxygen concentrators and ventilators, to India to help the country as it struggles to cope with the surge in coronavirus cases. The equipment comes from Britain's surplus stock, and the first shipment was due to arrive in New Delhi early Tuesday. That's according to the British Foreign Ministry. The number of cases in India surged by 349,000 in 24 hours. It's a four straight day of record peaks. Hospitals in New Delhi and across the country are turning away patients after running out of medical oxygen and beds. Other countries, including the United States, said it would send additional support to India as well. Tokyo Olympic organizers this week are unveiling additional plans to explain how 15,400 Olympic and Paralympic athletes can compete in Japan when the games open in 3 months. This comes as Tokyo and Osaka and several other areas have been placed under a third state of emergency as coronavirus cases surge. Japan has attributed about 10,000 deaths to COVID-19. Organizers are expected to announce daily testing for the athletes. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris will make the case before United Nations members Monday that now is the time for global leaders to begin putting serious work into how they respond to the next global pandemic. The virtual address will be Harris's second to a U.N. body since her inauguration. It will come as the United States makes progress on vaccinating the public and much of the world struggles to acquire vaccines. In excerpts from the speech, Harris says, at the same time that the world works to get through the pandemic, we also know we must prepare for the next. This is VOA News. More than 80 people have died in a catastrophic fire at a Baghdad hospital for coronavirus patients. Officials from Iraq's Interior Ministry say the blaze that started late Saturday was caused by an exploding oxygen cylinder. Among the dead were at least 28 patients on ventilators battling severe symptoms of the coronavirus. Negligence by hospital authorities has been blamed. The prime minister suspended and fired senior health officials and ordered an investigation. Some relatives were still searching for unaccounted loved ones on Sunday. U.S. President Joe Biden is rounding out his first 100 days in office and focusing on reining in the coronavirus, and seems to have paid off. Biden can check off nearly all his campaign promises centered on the pandemic, and in addition, he has delivered on a number of his biggest campaign pledges focused on climate change and the economy. Some issues have proven to be tougher for the Biden administration, particularly on immigration. He is grappling with how to enact promised reforms in the face of a steep increase in unaccompanied minors seeking to cross the border. Crowds have gathered in Paris and other French cities to denounce a ruling by France's highest court that the killer of a Jewish woman was not criminally responsible and therefore could not go on trial. That decision sparked outrage among the French and international Jewish community. 65-year-old Sarah Halimi died in 2017 after being pushed out the window of a Paris apartment by her neighbor, who allegedly shouted Allahu Akbar in Arabic. The neighbor admitted pushing her. The ruling from the court said that there was enough evidence to show the act had anti-Semitic motives, but that the neighbor had been delirious at the time. The neighbor is now in a secure psychiatric hospital. The Holy City of Jerusalem is a tinderbox of competing religious and political claims and has repeatedly triggered bouts of Israeli-Palestinian violence. This time around, there have been some additional sparks, including Jewish extremists who, emboldened by the political patrons' recent election to parliament, staged a provocative march to Jerusalem's walled old city, chanting death to Arabs. Over the course of a few days, nightly Jerusalem street brawls between Israeli police and disaffected Palestinian residents of the city escalated to cross-border fighting between Israel and Gaza's Islamic militant Hamas. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Chadian civil society organizations call for protest tomorrow, Tuesday.
They focus about France. They contest the military council. Adding to that, they say that they want civil transition, not military transition.
Military shootout in Mogadishu over Somalia's election impasse. A 77% trial efficiency of Oxford University's new malaria vaccine. Malawi government to destroy thousands of expired COVID-19 vaccine doses despite calls not to do so. And Tanzania's main opposition sets conditions for his return from exile.
It is not a question of being ready as in buying a ticket. That is the easiest part. It is about going back to Tanzania and being safe. Now, for that to happen, I need security guarantees from the government.
And calls to free Nigerian musician Yahya Sharif Aminu. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Civil society organizations in Chad have called for a protest tomorrow, Tuesday, to demand the disbandment of the Transitional Military Council. The council is led by General Mohamed Idriss Deby, the son of the late President Idriss Deby, who was laid to rest last Friday. Political parties have already called on Chadians not to respect the orders of the military council. They want the United Nations and the African Union to facilitate a comprehensive dialogue that will lead to democratic transition. Clement Abayifuta is president of the Association of Victims of Former Chadian President Issa Habre's Crimes. He says the protesters will also denounce France's involvement in Chad.
Civil society and opposition party politic and many organizations in the ground, they are involved to protest on Tuesday morning. They focus about France. They contest the military council. So this is the main reason that on Tuesday they will manifest. Adding to that, they say that they want civil transition, not military transition. So they are not ready to accept that the son of the last president can rule the country. All the people, more of them, refuse to accept that. So their attention is focused on the change in the country with new skill of development and security of the country.
The civil society, whoever is planning the demonstration, they are saying they want the protection of the African Union and the United Nations. Why are they making this demand? Why not Chadian soldiers to protect them?
They ask African Union because they no longer believe in our military group. They think and they hope that United States and African Union are more sensitive about their need and their hope. So, you know, in this country, the civil society don't expect new thing for military council. So they come back to ask with humility and in the urgent size that United States and African Union, who they said by writing that they are not longer accept that this council militaire lead the country or rule for the future of our country.
Clement Abayifuta is the president of the Association of Victims of Former Chadian President Issa Habre's Crimes. He is speaking with us from the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. Somalia's political stalemate over elections spilled over to the military on Sunday, resulting in gun battle in the capital, Mogadishu. Former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed alleged that soldiers loyal to President Mohamed Farmajo attacked his house on Sunday. In return, soldiers from outside Mogadishu attacked those loyal to President Farmajo. President Farmajo, whose term ended in February this year, is refusing to step down or facilitate the holding of free and fair elections. Abdi Razak Omar Mohamed is the Somali Member of Parliament and former security minister.
The situation in Rhodesia is very dire. There's a high tension right now. And all started when Somali army vacated their positions and came to Mogadishu to challenge the 10th extension of President Farmajo. I can hear the exchange of heavy weapons right now between the army that's the 10th extension and the army that's loyal to President Farmajo. This evening, the army that is loyal to President Farmajo tried to attack the residence of former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, but his security repulsed them. With additional reinforcements, they tried to attack again the residence of Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, and they were repulsed again.
The former president, does he recognize the presidency right now of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo?
No. Actually, it's not only the former president that doesn't recognize President Farmajo as the legitimate president, but all Somalis believe that the current president Farmajo, whose term has expired in February 2021, has no legitimacy to rule. In our constitution, it's very clear there are provisions that clearly state that the term of office for the president is 4 years. So his term has expired. He doesn't have any legitimacy to govern this country anymore.
What do you see as the way out of this? Because it seems if it continues like this, is this a recipe for a wider conflict?
I agree with you, James. It's a recipe for a wider conflict. And the security implications are that the army that have vacated their bases, Al-Shabaab will exploit that opportunity and they will take over those areas where they have vacated. Unfortunately, that's what is going to happen. You know that we have always said that the conflict should be resolved through a peaceful mechanism. The African Union has issued a statement saying that the principle is not to go back to the negotiation table. And that they found also, they condemned the term extension of the parliament. Unfortunately, yesterday, the information minister of the federal government of Somalia held a press conference in which he said that the extension is valid and the president has 2 more years to stay in power, complicating the situation as well.
It's always nice to talk with you, and thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, James.
Abdulrazak Omar Mohammed is a Somali member of parliament and a former security minister. You're speaking with us from the Somali capital, Mogadishu. Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, says if new President Samia Suluhu Hassan wants to make good on her call for national reconciliation, she should start by righting the wrongs committed against him and the Tanzanian people by her predecessor, the late President John Magufuli. Lissu fled into exile to Belgium last year following the October 28 presidential election because he said he feared for his life. Lissu says he's ready to return to Tanzania, but in order for that to happen, the Tanzanian government must guarantee his safety and meet other demands.
It is not a question of being ready as in buying a ticket. That is the easiest part. It is about going back to Tanzania and being safe. Now, for that to happen, I need security guarantees from the government. And for me to take the government seriously, the government must tell me and tell the people who was forced behind the assassination attempt in 2017. What are they going to do about those hired killers? The government needs to tell me that I will be a free person. As you may remember, there are 6 pending criminal cases in the Tanzanian courts against me.
About your security, I think I was reading, it's the police director that said that the police are there to provide security for all Tanzanians. So why do you want special security?
Well, not all Tanzanians were shot 16 times in 2017. I was. Not all Tanzanians have been subjected to death threats. I have been subjected to death threats. Not all Tanzanians have been repeatedly arrested by the police on politically motivated charges. I have. And therefore, given all that, I cannot be equated to all other Tanzanians because they have not gone through what I went through. They are not in exile. I am.
You are also demanding the freedom of political prisoners. Are there political prisoners in Tanzania now?
They are political prisoners as we speak. They are Tanzanians, members of my party, who are in prison as we speak, arrested on completely trumped up charges of economic offenses, money laundering, drug dealing, and all this because they dared to criticize the former president, Magufuli.
President Samia Suluhu Hassan has made some policy pronouncements since coming to power that some say set her apart from her predecessor, the late President Magufuli. First of all, what do you think about the new president? And do you think you can be an opposition during her administration?
I was very optimistic the first few days after President Samia Suluhu Hassan took office. She made some welcome remarks about national reconciliation. Those were during the first few days. But yesterday, she addressed the nation through her address to the National Assembly. And in 92 minutes of speech, she said absolutely nothing about the illegal ban on political activity that came into force with Magufuli. She said absolutely nothing about the political prisoners who are in prisons because of the Magufuli reign of terror. She spent only 1 minute to talk about her plans to meet political party leaders on an undisclosed date. Otherwise, she made it very clear that, as she said, she and Magufuli are one and the same thing. So my initial optimism that we are going to see a change of course has been dampened very much after yesterday. It was a major missed opportunity as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Lisu, it's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Tundu Lisu is Tanzania's main opposition leader. He was speaking with us from TNN, Belgium. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 26. Severe disruption to insecticide, treated mosquito nets, campaigns, and inaccessibility to anti-malaria medicines could lead to a doubling of the number of malaria deaths in sub-Saharan Africa this year compared to 2018. This, according to a World Health Organization report released for this year's World Malaria Day, which was yesterday, April 25th. WHO says Africa accounts for more than 90% of malaria infections and deaths globally. As Marine Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, malaria kills more children and pregnant women in Kenya. But help is on the way from Oxford University, which announced 77% trial efficiency of its R21 Matrix M malaria vaccine.
Malaria is a life-threatening disease caused by parasites that are transmitted to people through mosquito bites. Although malaria is curable, the World Health Organization estimates that the disease kills more than 400,000 people globally, most of them being children, as sub-Saharan Africa accounts for 94% of the deaths. Dr. Nathan Mulure, head of public affairs at Novartis in sub-Saharan Africa, said that most countries in Africa are affected by simple malaria, the type of malaria that is not life-threatening, as Congo, Nigeria, and Uganda carry the highest burden of malaria cases in Africa.
There are two types of malaria, simple malaria or uncomplicated malaria, and there's complicated malaria. So in uncomplicated malaria is where you have fever, joint pains, lack of appetite. You can still maybe walk, you're not too sick. If you look at the parasite blood count, it's not too high. But simple malaria can actually complicate, can worsen into complicated malaria.
Former Kenya rugby sevens coach Benjamin Ayimba is battling cerebral malaria, a severe type of malaria that affects the brain. According to the family, Ayimba has been critically ill of the severe malaria for months now.
My brother is truly sick. He's struggling for his life, but he's still there. And we thank God for everything and for his life and for what he's given to this nation.
Dr. Mulure says cerebral malaria can cause a lot of damages to the brain that can as well lead to stroke.
In the case of cerebral malaria, what really happens is that the parasites have really affected the red blood cells. And in the small blood vessels of the brain, These parasites can actually block the blood vessels and cause stroke-like features and even cause nerve damage.
Scientists have been on the run to develop malaria vaccines for years now, and a new malaria vaccine is being hailed as a game changer in the fight to eliminate the disease. R21 Matrix M, the Oxford Institute malaria vaccine, has proved 77% effective at preventing infection and is now entering larger human trials to rule out any side effects. Senior advisor, African Leaders Malaria Alliance, Dr. Willis Akwale, said that the vaccine trial in Burkina Faso is life-changing for sub-Saharan Africa.
Malaria can be very dynamic. The vectors in Burkina Faso, the parasite dynamics within regions can vary. So I predict they want to test it. I had four countries, and we are hoping that those four countries will offer diversity in terms of malaria transmission.
According to WHO, despite the challenges posed by COVID-19 pandemic, a number of countries reported zero indigenous malaria cases in 2020. WHO says in every 2 minutes, a child dies of malaria, and the 2021 malaria theme is Zero Malaria, with the tagline, every malaria case is preventable and every malaria death is unacceptable. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Malawi's government says it will go ahead with plans to destroy thousands of COVID-19 vaccine doses despite calls from the World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control not to destroy them. The Malawi government says the appeal has not only come too late, but it is not applicable to Malawi's situation. Lamech Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi government authorities say the appeals from the World Health Organization and the Africa CDC have come too late to prevent the destruction of thousands of doses of expired COVID-19 vaccine. Officials said the 16,440 doses of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine that expired on April 13 have already been removed from cold storage. Thursday, the WHO and Africa CDC had urged African countries not to destroy the vaccine that may have been expired, saying it is still usable. Dr. Charles Mwansambo is Malawi's Secretary for Health.
And it's also a requirement that every vial that's manufactured has an expiry date beyond which it cannot be used. In this case, we cannot proceed to use this because the vial clearly states the expiry date, and any doctor or any physician would not be forgiven in the event of anything happening after knowingly used a vial that was clearly labeled as having expired.
The expired vaccine is part of 102,000 dose donation the country received in March from the African Union. Malawi and South Sudan earlier announced plans to destroy about 70,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine that expired last month. Mwansambo also says using the expired vaccine would scare people from taking the jabs from the remaining stock.
If we leave or store these expired vaccines, that would be a big blow to our vaccination drive. People will not come. Now, even though we're not using them, people have been hesitant to come because they feel that they might be given the expired vaccines.
Mwansambo says the country may be considering extending the shelf life of the remaining stock of vaccine received through the COVAX facility and from the Indian government that expires in June and July. George Jobe is the executive director for Malawi Health Equity Network. He says using the expired COVID-19 vaccine would create a negative attitude in people.
We can have phobia from Malawians, which we should not. If the vaccines are safe, the CDC can take the expired vaccines or the WHO and donate it to the developed countries. But we have to witness the day the vaccines are leaving Malawi.
Dr. Mwansambo says destroying the expired vaccine is in line with the Malawi government guidelines on expired pharmaceutical products. He says the government will soon announce the date when it will publicly destroy the expired vaccine in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Nigerian musician Yahaya Sharif Aminu is currently detained in northern Nigeria and is undergoing a retrial after a religious court in Kano sentenced him to death last year for a song he shared via WhatsApp. John Saad Saheed is West Africa coordinator for Frimusi, which advocates for the rights of freedom of musicians around the world. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the case and the plight of Sharif Aminu.
Yahya's case is very peculiar. He's right now sentenced to death in Kano, because of his song that the Islamic Sharia court says is blasphemous against the Holy Prophet, the Islamic Holy Prophet Muhammad. So currently he's in jail, and anytime he can be killed. So that's the situation for Yahya. So we are campaigning for his release, his immediate release.
And he faces the death penalty, according to your release. Is this common? Are there other artists in this position in Nigeria?
No, for now, Yahya is the only one in Nigeria who is facing the death sentence, which has been put on him by the Sharia court in Kano.
When you say Sharia court in Kano, then, is it the federal official government that's doing it, or is it the religious courts that are outside of the federal system?
Is a religious court that is outside of the federal system.
How does this work? And is this technically illegal when it comes to the Nigerian constitution?
I don't know much about the Nigerian constitution, but what I can see is that in Kano, or in this Muslim-dominated northern part of Nigeria, the Sharia court in some parts is well. It's recognized and it's part of the legal system.
That was John Saheed, West Africa coordinator for Frimusi. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown, Sierra Leone. Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with mixed martial art news, where Nigerian-born American Kamaru Usman defended his Ultimate Fighting Champion welterweight belt after he knocked Jorge Masvidal out in the second round at the UFC 261 in the early hours of Sunday to truly stake his claim as an all-time great welterweight champion. The Nigerian nightmare dominated and put a stamp on his rivalry with Masvidal in front of 15,000 fans in Jacksonville, Florida, dropping Masvidal with a crushing right hand and flowing up on the ground for a knockout victory at 1 minute 2 seconds of the second round in the main event of the UFC 261 in Florida. With the victory, Usman wins improved his record to 19-1 and extended his unbeaten run to 18 fights, including 14 straight victories in the UFC.
I put a lot of time into this, and shout out to Masvidal. I mean, he I had to bring my A game. He elevated me. He gave me that extra oomph that I needed, in training. So, I'm just blessed to be in this time right now. I have big goals for myself, and I want to see it truly on Monday, pound for pound. Right now, I'm the best fighter on the planet.
In athletics news, with the Tokyo Olympic Games less than 100 days away, 10,000-meter world champion Joshua Cheptegei took to the tracks at the weekend at the Mandela National Stadium in Nambole, Uganda, as he started preparations for the Games. The world champion came third in a time of 3 minutes, 37.36 seconds in a race won by Ugandan middleweight distance runner Ronald Musagala. Joshua Cheptegei, the Ugandan long-distance king, took part in the 1,500-meter race as he looks to start building up speed for the Tokyo Games.
This is my first track race of the year, and I chose to run in 1500 to test my speed as a part of the preparations for the Olympic Games. And at times it gets more exciting, and no one wants to do the race, so you have to get some knowledge and some mechanism from trying to win the race, even if it is a slow race.
The 24-year-old currently owns the world record over the same distance, having broken it last year in Valencia. In cricket news, South Africa's future participation in international tournaments is in fresh doubt after the country's sports minister de-recognized Cricket South Africa. Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, Nathi Mtemthewa, stripped the CSA's members' council, made up of the presidents of the 14 provisional unions, of the right to run the game. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, April 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.